Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania.
Keystone of democracy.
I love your valleys and hills. I always will. You're the one great state that I am always for.
Again, we present another in the series of programs, Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy. Historical dramatization showing the part our own state of Pennsylvania plays in the life and success of these 48 United States in the development of the American way of life. This series is prepared and produced by the Pennsylvania Historical Commission in cooperation with the State Council of Defense in order to acquaint you better with the glorious history of our great Commonwealth, Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy.
Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania, and no matter where I roam, you will always be home, sweet home to me. Pennsylvania, my home.
Give us this day our daily bread.
Our daily bread. The bread which we earn by the sweat of our brows. The bread which is won by our labor, the labor of all of us. In America, the words of this simple, powerful prayer have a meaning far greater than in any other country. For in America, labor has had the opportunity to earn that bread. Opportunity far beyond any offered elsewhere. Opportunity which has today given our nation the highest standard of living ever seen on earth. And in this development of a nation, through raising of the living standards and recognition of the rights of labor, Pennsylvania has played a tremendous part. Let us look in now upon a discussion held in a Philadelphia tavern in the year 1792. Feelings seem to be running high over a certain issue.
I tell you, this movement is a departure from custom fraught with all kinds of serious dangers. Imagine it, just imagine it. By their own words, the knaves have convicted themselves. Listen to this. Listen here. I have the wording of their resolution here before me. Listen. That in the future a day's work among us shall be deemed to commence at 6 o'clock in the morning and to terminate at 6 o'clock in the evening of each day. There. That's what it says in black and white, gentlemen, in black and white.
Now, it don't seem to me that there's anything so terrible about that. What do you say, gentlemen? How about you, Tyler?
Well, I haven't been here since the beginning. You're talking about the cordwainers, I presume. The shoemakers.
Aye, we are.
Well, I must say I don't consider their objectives very unreasonable. 6 o'clock to 6 o'clock seems to be time enough for the work of a day.
You listen to me, young man. When I was a boy, we didn't have all this folderol to contend with. And it was good for us, too. Sun up to sundown. That's the proper time for labor.
What makes it the proper time,
What
Squire?
Makes it that way? What makes it that way, you ask me? Why? It always was that way.
Certainly, sir. No one can dispute that statement. But there's an element of change allowable in society, don't you think?
Element of change? Aye. There's those who wish to change, if that's what you mean. But mark my words, they're a dangerous crew. Absolutely dangerous.
What's dangerous about
them? This is dangerous about them. That if they get their way on this 6 o'clock to 6 o'clock idea, why, the next thing we'll know, they'll want to have only 10 working hours a day instead of 12.
And if it's possible, what's wrong with that?
Aye, there's the catch. It's not possible. How can a day's work be done in 10 hours, eh? Answer me that.
Well, there are those that say the machinery can give the answer to that. Use more machinery and employ more working
men. What? Employ more men and pay them the same wages? It's impossible.
It may appear so. But if more products of the machinery are sold, the employer will have more money to pay the workers.
Yes, 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 yes. I've heard all that before. But we mustn't let our imaginations run away with us, young man. Where is this wonderful machinery that's going to do all these wonderful things? We have to have the machinery first, don't we? And I tell you right here and now that a man would be a fool to invest his good money in any such wild gamble. I'm a successful man. I'm proud of it. And I'll let you know plainly that I'm a successful man because I work like my father worked from sunup to sundown, and that's the only way to achieve success. Mark it well. Mark it well.
But the old ideas of long hours and low pay could not last long in a country like America, a country whose resources had never been dreamed of before. Bit by bit, in the first days of their newly won democracy, it began to dawn upon Americans that their nation was one of the richest areas of the world. that potentially it held more than enough for everyone, and that the cultivation of its power would ensure human living standards which staggered the mind. And the worker, the laborer, looked for the opportunity of self-cultivation, for a life which would permit some leisure, a life which would give him some of the bounties which the American nation held before his eyes. He wanted recognition of his rights as a free citizen, an education for his children, the ability to raise his family standards. And in this movement, Pennsylvania was in the front rank. No less a person than Benjamin Franklin, the Philadelphia printer, aided in the organization of the journeyman printers in that city. And while objectives were sometimes misunderstood, there was much in them that worked to the advantage of the employer. Listen to this conversation between worker and owner in the 1790s.
We're taking steps to inform the public that they're being imposed upon by this new competitor of yours, sir. His products are cheap. He's using workmen who have no knowledge of the job. We hear that he's a fly-by-night who goes from city to city mulching the citizens.
But why are you taking my side in this?
It comes out to the advantage of both of us, sir. If your business prospers, we have the guarantee that our wages will be paid.
This association of yours is a curious thing. What else do you plan to do?
Why, we plan some kind of fund which will pay death benefits to the families of members who pass away. And there's a plan to have benefits for sickness and accidents paid out, too. We have a scheme to train our sons in the work so that they'll be sure of a job when they reach manhood.
It is a new thing and a strange thing, but I wish you well.
These were the beginnings, but they indicated the course that America was to take. There was another idea that had to come once the movement started, and at first it had a sound which did not appeal to everyone, even to the working men themselves.
Greetings, Harry. It's a pleasure to see you again. Have a chair, my good man.
Thank you, Jimmy. Thank you.
And what is the occasion that brings you to this end of town?
Business, Jimmy. Organization business. I believe you are president of your Shoemakers Association, are you not?
Aye, so am.
And I am head of the Journeyman Printers, am I not?
Aye.
And both of our organizations have rules and regulations that are something alike, aren't they?
Aye, but man, I don't...
It is true, is it not, Jimmy, that both our groups are seeking much the same things? Better working hours and conditions, extension of the right to vote, abolishment for imprisonment for debt, the establishment of free public schools, and... doing away with child labor and so forth?
So we are, man, but what's your point?
Just this. Why should it not be of the benefit to both our associations to join together and set up rules for the whole membership? Why should we both be working separately for the same things?
I cannot say that, Harry. It is a most unusual idea you're suggesting. It's to combine the shoemakers and printers into a trade organization that's one, isn't that it?
Aye, it is.
But if we were to combine, what would be to prevent other working groups like ourselves from wanting to be in it too? Answer me that. No, answer me that.
We could let them be in it. The more members we got, the bigger we would grow and the more strength we'd have.
No, you listen to me, laddie. For over 20 years, I've been a member of the Shoemakers Association. Seen it grow from only a handful to its present size. The Shoemakers Association is all right as it is. Perhaps, although I am doubtful, very doubtful, we could stand joining hands with your printers. But if you got some of those other organizations in with us, I'd be in trouble. We'll probably lose all the things we gain by trying to do too many things at once. You cannot put too many eggs in a basket without getting some of them broke, I was said.
We are too small, Jimmy, much too small. We are too separated from each other. It is time that all of us should realize that the more heads we can get together and the more people we can count on our membership list, the more we'll be able to do for ourselves.
It may be so, laddie, it may be so, but I fail to see it.
Yes, many workers fail to see the point of combining several trades into one group. But when the small, weak associations disappeared one by one, and when the depression which followed the War of 1812 made their lot worse, they were willing to look for a solution. It came finally in 1827 when at Philadelphia, the first effective organization of several trades in the United States was formed. It was the Mechanics Union of Trade Associations. At early meetings of this body, speakers would stress their broad social objectives.
Sunrise to sunset, working hours must go. We work long hours. We receive a pittance in wages. The establishment of a 10-hour day must be one of our first goals.
We must abolish the laws which permit imprisonment for debt. The working men, sweating through the long day for his meager hire, cannot avoid small debts of $2 or $3. To cast a man into a foul and dirty prison for failure to pay such a sum is a form of inhuman punishment which must cease.
We are living in a land which many of us fought to make free of oppression, and yet suffrage has not been expanded to permit all of us to vote. But certain of the courts against us, we have no redress in the form of the ballot. Suffrage must be expanded to the workers as a whole.
We have the right to free public education of our children. In this nation, every man is recognized as being created equal. Our sons and daughters must have the opportunity for advancement through equal chances at the start of life. We demand free schools.
These broader aims of organized labor were achieved together with their immediate objectives of better working hours, wages, and conditions. From its inception, organized labor played a large role in the advancement of the American democratic social order. The demands were heard and heeded. Free schools sprang up, wages increased, hours were lowered, the right to vote was extended, and imprisonment for debt ceased. With the advancement of the continent, with the resources which were drawn from American soil, the United States began its forward march toward a new era, an era filled with more humanitarianism, more opportunity, more of the riches of life than any nation had ever achieved before in history. And in Pennsylvania, through the medium of increasingly progressive labor legislation, and through the efforts of such pioneers as Uriah Stevens, Terence Powderly, and others, labor has risen to the position of great importance which it holds in our Commonwealth today.
In the present struggle for the existence of a free world, the workers who form America's great labor unions have pledged themselves to make any sacrifice, every contribution of time, money, or skill the national war effort may require.
In Pennsylvania today, the men and women who work in the mines, mills, farms, factories, and forges of this great arsenal of democracy are winning the battle of production.
Labor today in Pennsylvania looks back with pride to those pioneers in this Commonwealth who led the way in the development of human liberty. Firm to the same ideals, resolved to create a world fit for decent men to live in, it is again showing the same spirit that has always made Pennsylvania keystone of democracy.
Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania, you're the land that I adore. I love your valleys and hills, I always will. You're the one great state that I am always for.
You have just heard another in the statewide series of broadcasts, Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy, prepared and produced by the Pennsylvania Historical Commission in cooperation with the State Council of Defense. Buy war bonds and stamps to the limit of your ability. Do your share in salvage campaigns and submit cheerfully to rationing of essential war commodities. Listen in next week for another broadcast in the series, Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy.
Pennsylvania.